from 90.5 WESA. This is the confluence where the news comes together. I'm Kevin Gavin. Sunday, November 11th, is the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I. Armistice Day became known as Veterans Day. Today, we'll speak with a panel of veterans about misperceptions about veterans, including women veterans, but also their willingness to continue to serve, but now in their communities. Christiana Leach is an award-winning multimedia artist who uses everything from words to music to visual and performance art. We'll speak with her about her art and helping other artists connect with one another. Plus, we conclude our series on the largest restructuring the Pittsburgh Catholic Diocese in decades, with 188 parishes consolidating into 5 parish groupings. How's the process going so far? It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. On today's program, we meet award-winning multimedia artist Christiana Leach, also known as Christiana Dolores. Christiana not only works with words and sounds as a poet, playwright, musician, she also works with other artists in her role as Artist Relations Coordinator for the Greater Pittsburgh Arts Council. Welcome to the confluence.
Hello, good morning, all across the world.
Christiana, I mentioned a few of your artistic disciplines. I'm reluctant to list any others because I would almost be putting limits on you. It doesn't seem like you put limits on yourself.
I don't put limits on myself. I let the muse speak to me. So I think that's why I would kind of define myself as a multi-platform artist. I like working all forms. Really depends on the subject matter or the focus of what I'm creating.
Right. So how do you determine the subject matter and what's the best way, what's the best discipline to express that artistic nature within yourself to, you know, whatever you're trying to do, accomplish with your work?
I think a lot of things originate with questions, questions about what is happening or what isn't happening or what could happen. And depending on the angle of that question, the focus of that determines how I will respond to it.
Okay.
Sometimes it's music, sometimes it's painting. I recently had a show at Boom Concepts. That to address that particular subject, it needed to be visual and installation-like.
Right. We had Thomas Agnew on not too long ago on the show.
Yeah, there we go.
So I think that many people might describe their careers, doesn't matter what their career is, as a bit of a journey, whether it's moving from one job to another. Maybe it's changing industries altogether, moving from one locale to another. Is your artistic career a journey?
Well, hard to say that it isn't. I mean, I have described it as accidentally stumbling into new arenas, working with other artists who've encouraged me to try new things. So I've discovered like, oh, I like performance, and oh, I like performance poetry. So each thing kind of leads to the other thing and kind of creates this like waterfall of art making. Oh, I like that.
Oh, you like that. I like that too. Oh, you said accidentally stumbling. What about fate? What about just the openness to discovery? How about that?
Yeah, I'm a curious sort. I am a curious sort. Fate, I don't know about fate. That's a whole different philosophical discussion. But very, very curious about how things are done. I love dance. I will not call myself a dancer, but I love collaborating with dancers because I love to discover how it's done and how it's created. So there's that aspect of being curious and accepting that you're not going to be good at everything.
I want to ask you about specifics. Is it experiences? Is it are they observations? So what inspires you? What drives you? Is it something in the news? Something that's happening in society? What inspires you to create?
I spent all last night pacing around trying to answer that question. I can't think of anything that doesn't inspire me. Mm-hmm. Like, I could pull it out of the air in some ways. It could be the way that someone moves in the way the light hits them in the early in the morning, it can be something that's happening on the news. It can be a story a friend told me. It could be something that I overhear on the bus. It's really kind of what strikes a chord within me and resonates with this need to kind of create a better world or a place where we are better to each other.
So are there particular issues that are happening in the news or that you observe that sort of get you to want to create, whether it's, I don't know, inequities, whether it's environment, what have you? Tell me.
Well, I mean, you can't help but see this continued thread of hate and mistreatment. And so what is the origin of that? And why, in so many ways, is it tied to white supremacy and white privilege? What does that all mean? What does it mean to be white? These are questions that I ask, as questions I ask of myself and other people. I think at the root of it, people want to belong and people want to be loved. Right. At the root of it, I would think. That might make me sound like a hippie, but where does hate originate and why does it continue growing and why does it continue perpetuating itself? Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Right.
Cruelty is fascinating to me.
So what do you want the people that experience your art to get from it? I mean, if you're talking about a harsh but true subject, cruelty or hatred, what do you want them to get from how you express your feelings about that issue through your art? I mean, do you want a positive reaction? What are you looking for?
Well, first, considering that people are growing numb to what's going on, so an un-numbness, if that's a word, to wake up from it and actually feel, no matter how many times there are mass shootings, it's not normal. Mm-hmm. We should not be responding to these things as if it's normal. It's like, oh, it's just another day in America. It is not another day in America. Every day is a new day. And every day, each of us have the power to change that fact. I want people to see themselves and see their own power. Not everything, I mean, life is yin and yang. So the concept of harshness being negative, I don't see it that way. So I would challenge people to look at it differently.
Okay. Our guest is a multi-platform artist, Christiana Leach. As I mentioned earlier, you're also the artist relations coordinator for the Greater Pittsburgh Arts Council. I'd like to ask you a few questions about that. So the council, as many people know, is the leading advocate for artists and arts organizations in the region. Can you give us an idea of what are the common challenges that artists face today, say in the Pittsburgh region, people that you deal with?
I work a lot one-on-one with artists, and I will say the challenge that Pittsburgh artists face is a challenge that most artists face in this country, which is our society doesn't quite value the arts. It's seen as a luxury. And really working hard to, I mean, that's one of the first things you right. deal with. And that just springs right into support for the arts. So art is everywhere. It's part of our life. It's, I think, what maintains our spiritual sanity. So that is not a luxury. I think there is a professionalism to it that people will not quite recognize. It is not a hobby. Support isn't just buying a ticket. Support is financially supporting the artists in your community. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. They're teaching your children. They work in businesses. They work in small businesses. They work in collectives. Artists are everywhere contributing to the culture of the city, but just the culture of this country. So it's not something to just take lightly and not support.
The Greater Pittsburgh Arts Council also does, I think it's fair to say, lobbying of government support, because is it a balance you're looking for of private individual support and then the need for
Well, I will say this. I think as a nonprofit, we can't lobby.
Okay. You inspire.
We inspire. We go to tell the story of the arts to our representatives.
Right. Okay.
And make sure that it stays on their minds and make sure that it doesn't leave the platform of many things that they should be looking at and supporting.
Okay. Just a couple of minutes left. I wanted to ask you about your approach to making the arts more accessible, even more equitable. Just tell us a little bit.
My approach as the artist relations manager?
Yes, please.
I think a lot of that happens with my one-on-one discussions. I meet with artists of all walks of life. Many are young, many are emerging, many are returning. Each one is, it's a customized kind of, customized care, I guess I would, customized consulting. Each person is unique, as is their art. So I think that's how I work to make it equitable, and also with the programming.
Right.
And make sure that everyone has access to the programs and there are no barriers that prevents people from everywhere. I mean, over the 10 counties of all different kind of financial levels, that there are no barriers to getting the resources that they need.
Okay. What about accessibility for people who consume the arts?
That is in the area of my colleague Ann Mulgrave, who actually has won a national award for the work that she's done. I can say that we offer a micro grant to artists that if you want to have an interpreter there, sign language interpreter, or we have the equipment for closed captioning, we can provide that for individual artists. But she's done a lot with workshops and working with the nonprofits in our area.
We have just about 20 seconds left. We were talking about you're working one-on-one with artists. How important is it to connect the artists, though, together, to network them?
Oh, it's extremely important. I think a lot of new things that are emerging, such as the Network for Arts Administrators of Color, networking is right up there with the need for funding and marketing.
Very good. Christiana Leach is the Artist Relations Coordinator for the Greater Pittsburgh Arts Council, and she's an award-winning multi-platform artist under the name of Christiana Dolores. Christiana, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
And you're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. Last month, the Pittsburgh Catholic Diocese began implementing its largest restructuring in decades, 188 parishes merging into 57 parish groupings. 90.5 WESA's Virginia Alvino Young reports the effort to revitalize the church comes in the midst of declining mass attendance, a shortage of priests, and a sexual abuse scandal.
Good morning. How are you today?
Half a dozen seniors gather in the small chapel of Hamilton Hills Assisted Living Facility in Turtle Creek, east of Pittsburgh. Deacon Herb Riley leads a service here every week. As part of his unpaid duties, the 66-year-old deacon of St. Coleman Parish assists with charitable work for the sick and homebound and with sacraments like marriages and baptisms. But he's not a priest, and as a married man, can't become one. Riley says the priest shortage has really caught up to the diocese. Instead of a few priests being assigned to each parish, one priest will now lead multiple parishes. The reorganization plan, called On Mission for the Church Alive, was implemented last month. Priests will have to merge the parishes as communities and businesses.
We're barely paying our bills, so that's where we are.
Although Riley's new priest will be tasked with leading St. Coleman's, St. John Fisher, and St. Jude, for Riley, there will be a nice perk to being part of a larger community.
And maybe my homilies I'll be able to reuse now that I'm with new people who have never heard them before.
St. Coleman parishioner Sue Buchholz is also looking forward to the new blood. She says when the final groupings were announced, she took it upon herself to meet with other churchgoers and even volunteered at their festivals. She's remained optimistic, but knows it won't be easy.
You know, as we all know,
The older we get, the more we're set in our ways. We don't like change. People don't like change. And our grouping is somewhat older, so I realized it was going to be difficult.
Per the reorganization blueprint, the first year is all about getting to know each other. The mass schedule will rotate through different parish buildings. Buchholz says her strategy will be to attend services at other churches and invite people to hers. She also encourages people to stand at the door of St. Coleman's and greet newcomers. She says in this case, attitude is everything.
Positive and welcoming and understanding, you know, understanding and listen. Let's just go one step at a time. We're all one community. We're not a building.
But for many parishioners, the building matters. Deacon Riley says that although parish infrastructure won't even be discussed for at least a year, people's biggest concern is whether or not their church is going to close.
My church, where I received all of my sacraments because I grew up here, and they don't want to lose that. But the reality is, we can't keep all of the buildings open. We just can't afford to do that, number one. And with the numbers that we have now, there's no need for all of these buildings.
And those numbers could continue to drop. Mass attendance across the diocese has fallen by about 100,000 people since the year 2000, and a sexual abuse crisis in the church hasn't helped. Riley says someone talks to him about it every day, and he knows people are leaving the church because of it. Buchholz says the only thing to do is to remain faithful.
You know, unfortunately, there were some horrific things that happened, and we have to, we have to admit, you know, we admit that, we don't deny it, but we have to stay focused on what we're all about, and we're about Jesus Christ.
In addition to focusing on that mission and serving the faithful, the reorganization strategy is also intent on growing the church.
People think of evangelization as knocking on people's doors and, you know, try to convince them to come to church.
But Riley says to him, evangelization means looking inward and making the church a place that people want to be.
If we can provide programs and opportunities for people that were never provided before, it may be a way of being able to draw back people who we lost in the past. And especially we want to do that with our young people.
According to the diocese, the first few weeks with the new mass schedule have been a little rocky as church groupings work out the logistics, but people are already starting to get to know each other. I'm Virginia Alvino Young, 90.5 WESA News.
You're listening to The Confluence. It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Sunday, November 11th, marks the centennial of the end of World War I, which was originally celebrated as Armistice Day, and since 1954 as Veterans Day. We're going to discuss misperceptions about veterans, their desire to continue to serve their communities, and we're pleased to be joined in studio by Ariana Barringer, Iraq War veteran, served as communications operator with the 18th Army Airborne. She's now global IT project manager and founder of the nonprofit American Nutritional Security. Also, Patty Gerhauser is a U.S. Navy veteran, a petty officer, now a community organizer with the Hazelwood Initiative. Randy Lavander is director of business development at the Veterans Leadership Program of Southwest Pennsylvania, and he's serving on active duty in the Air Force. And Todd DiPastino is a historian, and he directs the nonprofit Veterans Breakfast Club. Welcome to you all. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us, Kevin.
I want to start with, briefly, what does Veterans Day mean to you? Randy, you're still active duty, so we're going to start with you.
Sure. Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate you having us here. And Veterans Day means to me as a way to celebrate those that have paved the way for me and those that are serving along with me. So I take this time to help to teach my children how to acknowledge the people that have made tremendous sacrifices for all of us and the freedoms that we have.
Ariana.
Veterans Day for me is a day every year where I feel like organizations come together to recognize our service and, you know, the community comes together to recognize our service. And it's always a day of honor for me to just even call myself one of the many.
Mm-hmm. Patty?
To me, Veterans Day is a time to pause and reflect on our experiences as military members and to share our stories with the larger civilian population and just take the time to kind of connect in that way and share what we learned through our experiences and what we're doing currently to continue to serve our communities and our country.
Todd, you're not a veteran, but you work with them all the time. You're with them. So what does Veterans Day mean to you?
Veterans Day is a celebration of veterans. Memorial Day is remembering those who died in service. And Veterans Day used to be called, there probably are listeners who are old enough to remember, used to be called Armistice Day, and it celebrated one thing, and that was the end of the catastrophe of World War I. And then it was changed to Veterans Day in the Eisenhower administration, and Decoration Day was changed to Memorial Day.
Right, right. So, Patty, Ariana, Randy, why did you want to serve? All right, Ariana, they're looking at you.
Okay, you know, I joined 2 months after 9/11. So, you know, I was an 18-year-old kid, and I knew then that I was going to war. So for me, it was a matter of service. I saw my community do so much for me growing up in poverty that this was my opportunity to give back to everybody who had done so much for me. So that's why I joined.
Randy?
Kevin, I realized at the time back in 1995 that I wasn't prepared for college. I decided to enter the Air Force to find other opportunities, and I served on active duty for 8 years. And then I had a lengthy break in service for 9 years and went back into the Air Force in 2012 after that 9-year break in service. Mm-hmm. I realized after that 9 years that I missed serving. I missed the camaraderie that existed in my unit.
Mm-hmm. And Patty?
I joined for a few different reasons. One was kind of a family legacy thing. Generations of my family have served in the military. My father served in the Air Force for 20 years and retired from the Air Force. Additionally, the opportunity to travel the world and learn more about different cultures and just how the U.S. interacts with other nations and just be a part of something larger than myself.
Hold it. You said your father was Air Force.
Yes.
Your Navy.
Yes.
Okay, he's all right with that?
Yes. A big part of why I chose the Navy was I love being at sea. I grew up in Alaska and did a bunch of deep sea fishing. I love being on the water. And also the opportunity to travel was more expansive with the Navy.
I'd like to talk briefly about what you're all doing right now. And Todd, I want to start with you. You've been directing the Veterans Breakfast Club for 10 years?
10 years.
Okay. So what happens there? Is it helpful for veterans to sort of share their own stories to get together beyond the socialization?
Yeah, I found that it is helpful for veterans to share their stories of service, beginning with why did you join the branch you did? I mean, you just asked that question. You got three very different answers. And then I've also found that veterans, even if they only serve for, say, 20 months in the military, Randy and I were just talking about this, if they were drafted, served for 20 months, got an early out. As one Vietnam veteran told me, it was 1% of his life and 75% of who he is. There's a searing, condensed, intense experience that military service entails. And it's fascinating for me, just as a kind of a student of human nature and a student of history, to hear the stories kind of firsthand from history. And I've come to believe that our veteran stories are just not their own. They're all of ours. It's our heritage. It's our history. These men and women in the room went into the armed forces for us. We sent them there as citizens of the U.S. And I think their stories are really ours.
So, I mean, obviously because history is our stories.
That's it. Their stories are our history.
Right. I wanted to mention at the beginning, I said, Ariana, that you are the founder of a nonprofit, American Nutritional Security. Mm-hmm. What is that?
So, you know, when I went to join, they told me I was too fat to fight. I had to lose the weight before I could go to war, which blew me away. But I didn't grow up with an education in nutrition. I was poor. If there was food, I was eating it, right? I was just lucky that there was food to eat. So I recognized that I struggled with my nutrition, and our military branches are actually struggling with enlisting folks now because of obesity.
Oh.
And so I think the last statistic I saw was 3 out of 4. Young adults can't serve in today's military. And so a piece of that is obesity, a piece of that is nutrition. And if we get into our schools and start to bring our local farmers into our schools as a matter of building our local economies. That's what we've been advocating for with my nonprofit.
Yeah, General Frank Muth was on the program a little while ago, and he agreed completely with you as nutrition or obesity being one of the challenges in recruiting individuals. Right. So, Patty, what's your role with the Hazelwood Initiative?
With the Hazelwood Initiative, I serve as a community organizer, and that means a lot of different things. I wear many hats, from case management to doing outreach to working with large collaborative groups on comprehensive neighborhood plan for the neighborhood, to talking with people about things they're struggling with and then trying to convey that to the larger groups that I sit with and advocate on their behalf to make sure that development is inclusive and it's done in a way that is meant to serve the people who are currently living in the community.
All right. Randy, I wanted to ask you briefly, what is the mission? What's the role of the Veterans Leadership Program?
Well, Kevin, the role of the Veterans Leadership Program is to primarily provide service, housing services and employment services and other services to veterans in the area. We started back in 1982 as the Vietnam Veterans Leadership Program, and we've continued that same mission, but we're broadening our services at this point. We have folks that are working in the criminal justice system to help veterans that have stumbled along the way to help them regain their footing. We're really engaged at this point with programs to help veterans with physical fitness through our Task Force Phoenix program. And we have some programs that are specific to female veterans as well, housing programs and female veteran support groups.
We're going to continue to talk about veterans' issues, challenges, opportunities, the desire to continue to serve when the Confluence continues on 90.5 WESA. It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm pleased to be joined in studio by Ariana Berenger, an Iraq War veteran, Patty Gerhauser, a U.S. Navy veteran, Randy Levander, Director of Business Development at the Veterans Leadership Program of Southwestern Pennsylvania, and historian Todd DiPastino, who directs the nonprofit Veterans Breakfast Club. There is a campaign, Rethink Vets. When you watch the video, when I watched it, it should shatter any stereotypical images you might have about veterans. But what misguided images persist?
That they're white,
Ariana,
and male. just the other day I went to Lowe's, and Lowe's is pretty cool because they have this preferred veteran parking up front. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, and they give you a 10% discount. And so I park my car. And sure enough, a man in a big black truck stopped me and hollered at me and was like, "You're not allowed to park there." And
wow.
I looked at him and I said,
wow,
"Actually, I am, and you're welcome."
Good for you.
Good for you.
Very.
Love it.
Because I may have been in, you know, a dress and heels running into Lowe's, but that doesn't mean that I'm not a veteran.
Exactly.
And so I hope that moment really helped to rethink, you know, reshape his mind about what a veteran is. And I think that's some of what we're seeing today.
Yeah. Patty, any misperceptions that you perceive, that you see, not just perceive, but actually see?
Yeah, I agree with Ariana. That's the biggest one for me as well, is this perception that, and even showing up to like veterans events, sometimes people address my husband and say, "What branch did you serve in?" when they're writing our name tags, right?
I might have done that.
Let me guess, he is not a veteran?
He is not a veteran. And so, I mean, that for me is one of the biggest ones, is that people are just shocked to learn that I'm a veteran, and they never make the assumption on their own. And then also, I would say, I was a part of the Rethink Vets campaign, and one of the biggest things for me as well are the misperceptions that people have of veterans in general and kind of the assumptions they make about you when they figure out that you are a veteran. For me, the biggest ones that I find most defeating are the thought that I'm pro-war, pro-gun, I'm possibly a far-right Republican. Those kinds of assumptions, to me, I don't appreciate them, and I try and educate people and change that narrative as often as I get the opportunity.
Todd.
Yeah, our veterans are a very diverse group. And if you want to see the diversity of our veterans in its full glory, come to a Veterans Breakfast Club event. We hold storytelling
Where
events.
Where are they?
There are 30 different locations in western Pennsylvania. We hold about 65 of them a year. We're having one tonight at Animal Friends at 6 p.m. We had one on Monday night at Spoonwood Brewing in Bethel Park. We'll have one at Christ Church at Grove Farm next Wednesday. They're all over the place. And our idea is to kind of go out into the neighborhoods, gather the veterans together with members of the public. We want non-veterans to come and hear these stories. And it is stunning to me how diverse the stories are. The other thing that's stunning to me that I've learned about veterans is the problem of reintegration, I think, getting out of the military, getting back into civilian life, is not so much connected to any trauma that they might have experienced, but it's just the loss of community, the loss of mission and purpose. That's really a profound loss, and I think veterans really grieve that sense of camaraderie and community when they get out. And what our events try to do is kind of, and other organizations try to do, is kind of rebuild that camaraderie in the civilian world.
Mm-hmm. And Randy, misconceptions that you have experienced or seen.
A couple of misconceptions to point out here, Kevin. One of them is that there's a misconception in this region that southwestern Pennsylvania isn't a military community. It certainly is. There was a study done just a few years ago by the Center for the New American Security that showed that southwestern Pennsylvania has the fourth largest concentration of veterans in the United States. The second misconception that I see quite frequently is that veterans are broken. And I want to point out the concept of what's called post-traumatic growth, where we're seeing a tremendous number of veteran business owners now. Veterans running for political office. So we're seeing a tremendous growth period at this point. So where there are some veterans that may be broken, that need our help of various programs, we're seeing tremendous growth with business and within the political realm.
I want to talk a bit about that transition of, you know, both from adapting the skills that were honed and developed while doing military service and how they could very well apply and benefit an employer. But is there a certain reaction? I know I'm generalizing here from employers in general, but, oh, you're a veteran. And is there a look that comes upon their face? Ariana.
Well, I think some of that does come from the, oh, well, veterans are broken. But what the reality is that veterans are on time, and most of the time we are early. We are flexible. We can take change better than anybody. And I have recognized that in my own career, but I've also recognized that just within my own community. And I think that it's interesting also the preconceived understanding of what it meant whether you were an enlisted veteran or if you were an officer.
Points for officers.
Right, because as an officer, you know, you already either have college education and you watched over and or led other soldiers. But as an enlisted, you also do those same things, and it's just a different understanding of what it means to be on both sides of those.
Penny.
I think there's a lot of misconception or misunderstanding, too, around what exactly it is that people in the military do. I mean, we all have a job title, and there's a job description that goes along with that, but being in the military, especially when you're deployed, there's so much more than that. I mean, for me, being in the Navy, I was on a ship for 6+ months, 24/7. I never left the office, right? I lived at the office. And so to try and convey to people that even though my job was to operate an air search radar, I also have experience in workforce development. I took junior sailors and I helped to mold them into people who had a good work ethic or who did a good job or who were promoted, right? There's a huge component of that as well. There's a huge strength, I think, from veterans and our ability to collaborate with people and to work in a group setting and to bring people to the table, because we understand that to do that, it makes you more successful to have a diversity of voices in the room and to bring people together to accomplish something. You can accomplish more when you work that way.
Do we underestimate the impact of moving from military life to civilian life? And it's not just about getting that job, starting that career. I mean, you've lost housing. You've lost health care. Okay, Randy.
Sure, Kevin. As a non-commissioned officer in the Air Force, I often have counseling sessions or mentoring sessions with younger airmen that I work with at their time of potential reenlistment. And I try to break down those things for them to gain them a real understanding of the benefits that are offered to them through the military versus the challenges that they may encounter in the civilian world.
Anybody else?
Todd. I just might add from a historical perspective, I think the root cause of these misunderstandings and misapprehensions of veterans is our all-volunteer force. We have a very small active duty military, the smallest since the 1930s. Most Americans can go through their daily lives without really encountering veterans.
I want to play off of that volunteer force. In our remaining, we have just 3 minutes left. I think that speaks to the spirit of veterans who want to continue to serve, but in a different role within their community. Ariana.
Yeah, I mean, I think that service, it goes beyond just telling our stories with the Veterans Breakfast Club. There's an organization here in town called The Mission Continues, and that's how Patty and I met, on a service project at the Flight 93 Memorial. Mm-hmm. You know, we went out on Veterans Day and do work in our communities. We give back to our communities because there is that whole of no longer wearing the uniform, that we want to make sure that we are still doing something. And that's running for political office. That's, you know, all of these things. These are all forms of servant leadership.
Patty?
Yeah, I actually am a platoon leader for the nonprofit The Mission Continues in the Hazelwood neighborhood, where I work as a community organizer as well.
And briefly, what does that do, The Mission Continues?
The Mission Continues is a veteran service organization. What we do is we take veterans and non-veterans in communities, and we work together to help the local community. So in Hazelwood, what that looks like is we focus on neighborhood revitalization. So we've renovated buildings and homes. We built and installed free little libraries and free little pantries this summer around the neighborhood to help with food insecurity and childhood literacy, just different things like that.
Randy, is that sort of that spirit of service, is that sort of ingrained in the DNA?
Yeah, absolutely, Kevin. That's something that is ingrained in us during our military service. And as we're seeing here in this area, we have a very robust veteran community that is growing constantly. And we have organizations like The Mission Continues, Volunteers Through Veterans Leadership Program. Team RWB is another great example of that. We're seeing veterans and military members in the region constantly giving back to their communities.
And Todd.
Yeah, absolutely. I see it all the time. Veterans, more than any other population I know, they're civic-minded. They want to volunteer. They want to help. They're service-oriented. When we have our events, veterans show up early to help out, and then they stay late to clean up. I mean, it's just it's stunning to me, the amount of energy and effort and other-mindedness that veterans have.
All right, we have just about 30, 40 seconds left, and whoever wants to take this, we've heard about what you four are doing to change the narrative about veterans. What can the community at large do to help get a better picture?
I think they should go to Todd's Veterans Breakfast Club. I think that they should recognize that veterans are also not wanting to be honored just on Veterans Day, but every day of the year. You talk to us, ask us about our stories and our experiences.
Okay, briefly, Patty.
I would say the same thing. Instead of just using the rote line, thank you for your service, ask me about my service. Ask me where I served, what I did, and show an interest in that.
Okay, Todd.
Best way to thank a veteran is to listen.
And finally, Randy.
Yeah, absolutely. Just engage. If you see someone with a veteran hat or in military uniform, engage them in conversation. Yeah.
All right. Ariana Berenger is an Iraq War Army veteran and founder of the nonprofit American Nutritional Security. Patty Gerhauser is a U.S. Navy veteran, now a community organizer with Hazelwood Initiative. Randy Levander is director of business development at the Veterans Leadership Program of Southwestern Pennsylvania and is active duty Air Force. And Todd DePestino is an historian and directs the nonprofit Veterans Breakfast Club. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, from working with teens at AmeriCorps to mayor of Braddock to lieutenant governor, a conversation with John Fetterman. And today's program was engineered by Meg Fair, production assistance from Mick Stanelli. The producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good weekend of good news.